way government regains the trust of its citizens is by telling the truth. There is no other way. No shortcut.
I call upon our government to open up like the Belgians have, the French have, the Brazilians have, the Argentines, the Mexicans have all released their files. It's about time now that we do the same thing and become a part of this planetary community.
It is way past time for all of us to know what our own government knows instead of being kept in the dark.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to Galactic Roundtable, Countdown to Disclosure. This is Beth, and I'm very happy to announce that we're here with Senator Mike Gravel. Senator Gravel was with us at the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure, and we welcome him here to share with us the news since then. Senator Gravel, hello. How are you today?
Hi. Happy to be on your program, and thank you for interviewing me.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your time. You may have seen on Friday night after the citizens' hearing, the New York Times ran an article, and it said, "Visitors from outer space, real or not, are focus of discussion in Washington." I have to say I'm pretty sure most of my listeners listened on the live broadcast the whole week, and I was wondering if you would share with us your thoughts about what came out of the citizens' hearing.
I thought it was excellent. I truly feel that we were able to put together, well, not we, it was primarily the Steve Bassett and the Paradigm Group, Rebecca Miller and her partner, that brought together a group of 40 individuals from about seven countries who were able to give testimony of personal experience. Now, about half of these testimonies were from PhDs and people who were researchers by profession. And another half probably I would count as military officers, highest ranking being a colonel, a full colonel. And they were able to give us hands-on testimony of what they experienced when they were either doing their research, actually experiencing it in the military. And this, in my mind, was totally convincing and a slur at the federal government, particularly the White House, for saying that they had no information, they have no files, and they know nothing about it.
That's right. During the week, at the citizens' hearing, something developed that was a communique that was put together for the United Nations. Will you talk to us more about that, please?
Yes. My sense, the goal of the group staging this hearing was to sort of shame or press the Congress to hold a hearing on its own. And that's why they wanted former members of Congress so that we could go back to contacts we had on the Hill and persuade them to hold a hearing. Well, first off, I don't have any contact that I value on the Hill at this point in time and that I could persuade. And I think that the other members of Congress had a similar situation. So
I think we knew that.
Yeah, well, I don't think we'd get anything out of the Congress, period.
Right.
But I did think that there was a venue, a governmental venue, where this subject should be taken up at length, and that was the United Nations. And so I was instrumental in getting a resolution from the week's hearing to try to persuade several countries to table a motion at the United Nations to create a commission. The commission then would create or authorize or sponsor a global conference, not a global hearing, but a global conference on extraterrestrial presence. Now, since found out that the UN has a commission that was, I believe, instituted in 1978, And that was as a product of the Prime Minister of Granada. And so, but it hasn't done anything. It's been dormant ever since. There is a commission, an agency within the UN that deals with the science and technology in space and legal aspects of space, which is a little different. And that group is meeting, I think, between the 7th of June to the 21st of June in Vienna. I've suggested that Steve Bassett and the others send one or two persons to monitor what that committee is doing. But I think that the answer is the commission. And so what we now need is to persuade one of the member countries of the commission, and the likely ones are Uruguay and Brazil, and other countries that will then put forth a motion from the commission to the General Assembly, not to the Security Council, which wouldn't do anything in this regard, but put forth a resolution authorizing the sponsorship of the UN of a global conference on ET presence.
Fantastic.
So that's where we're at. We now have to get one or two countries to agree to do that. And I think a likely country would be Uruguay, and I think we have some good contacts for Brazil and possibly Peru. We had a very interesting contingency from South America at our conference, and they are much, much more open about it. Now, also France, which has been open about it under prior administrations, now whether they would be under the Hollande administration remains to be seen, but they should be approached. Because they're members of this agency.
Right. I interviewed Stephen Bassett on Friday, and I said to him, if the head of state, President Barack Obama, does not come out with disclosure, and a head of state from another country does, what would they put forth that would cause disclosure? And he was pointing out about the video machines on all the guns, on all the planes, and that they have videotape, you know, that can't be disputed. And that made me think of this contingency from South America. And the thing that they touched on during the hearing that I didn't think was widely known was that the United States has been in their countries at all these events all this time. And I was wondering what your thoughts about that were.
It would be very difficult to persuade the United States to walk away from the secrecy that's been enveloped over the ET presence. But I don't think one country could do it. But I think a global conference. Now, the United States is the member of this inactive commission, mm-hmm. And so if this commission votes to take to the UN a resolution to sponsor a global conference, I think that the U.S. could be shamed into releasing its files in this regard. So I think that there's over 100, no, there's 74 countries that are members of this commission. And if the majority of those that you'd have a majority or close to majority in the UN General Assembly. So if the UN General Assembly overwhelmingly voted for this global conference, that would put the U.S. in a very embarrassing situation of continuing the secrecy, because probably the U.S. has most of the debris and the records of the extraterrestrial presence in the world, because as we got testimony from the crash site in Peru, the U.S. government was down there immediately with the helicopters and took the debris back to the U.S. So, but the only way you're going to do this with the U.S. because the Obama administration, see what they they got themselves in a box. They've been lying to the American people that they don't have any records on this, and they've got extensive records, more records than probably anybody else in the world. So they would have to admit that they were lying to the American people or the people of the world when they make this revelation. And so this is going to take a lot of pressure to get them to fess up to the fact that they were lying. But this was no different than the Pentagon Papers, which showed that the three presidential administrations had lied to the American people as to why and how that we got into the Vietnam War. So it's nothing new that the government is lying. Would the Obama administration react to this, or would we have to wait for this to be an issue in the next presidential election? It will take us a year or more to organize the commission to have the conference, and it would take a year to or more to organize the conference properly. So that it would not be, it would be people that are knowledgeable that would be discussing the various aspects of the ET presence, which would be the sociological aspects, the religious aspects, the technical aspects, the scientific aspects. All of those things would be treated in a discourse, and so will
it's
that be
a very
enough?
Complicated topic.
Yeah, but what will happen, though, this will get a lot of attention from the global media, and that in itself could isolate the United States and embarrass them into joining forces. And they may even anticipate this, and a new administration would be able to probably have the courage to open up the files on this. Clearly, Obama doesn't have the courage nor the stamina or the guts to do this.
Mm-hmm. I have a little different point of view I'd just like to put out here, but first I want to say a little comment about the Congressional Committee. I've been working on this, on disclosure for 4 years. I left my job and I have no paycheck, and I just do this. When I met the Congressional Committee, I have to say that all the ones there, if I had to look at their politics, I would say, you know, I was skeptical. And then as we got very quickly, when we got into the hearing, it was amazing how this issue was treated with respect, and it made it very important. And then I want to say, you know, I was there every day, and on day three, after these PhDs and these researchers and these doctors had given their testimony for two solid days, and it was a very rigorous schedule, on day three, the body language of the committee was reflecting in the beginning in the morning that they fully understood the gravity of the situation. And I was so pleased with how that came out. And people like me who've been focusing on this for a long time and had given it a lot of thought, some of us felt that the Office of Science and Technology Policy response was kind of a double dare to our community, to say, you need to double down, you need to do more work, we can't do this by ourselves. And Steve Bassett alluded to this during the last day. He said, maybe President Obama does know about this, and maybe he's been doing things to help us. You know, we've had signs in the past. In 2004, the Rockefeller Initiative fell through. In 2009, John Podesta was sitting on 800 million documents that he was ready to release. So some of us in this community feel we've seen disclosure almost happen before. And Steve Bassett's point is that the military and the intelligence have to come together with President Obama. Maybe President Obama's ready, but these three have to come together in order for it to happen in the U.S. And that's who I think we need to pressure into giving it up. And we saw how that part of it with the corporate financing for secret space program are the ones making the money. So I wanted to just present that to you and see if you had a comment.
Well, yeah, the comment I'd make is that I don't have that much confidence in President Obama. I've observed him on a whole host. I've observed him on a whole host of issues, and I found him to be wanting in every area, other than nurturing his own image rather than proceeding and accomplishing things. So I don't share that view, and that's okay. The reason why I would focus on the UN. Secondly, with respect to Podesta, that I would doubt that a person in his position would be able to press the military-industrial complex into an openness that is almost generically impossible for them to make. So it's nice to have a big name that will say things, but whether that can be translated into a broad government policy, that remains to be seen. Our biggest problem is the generic propensity that the military have towards secrecy, and the fact that many of these revelations would be an embarrassment to the military. Yes. Because they don't know what's going on, and nor does anybody else. And so, if we're to believe that there were extraterrestrial individuals, persons who were captured or who were killed, and their bodies were exhumed and autopsies were performed, that's all information that would be valuable to have. And so we have direct testimony on some of that, but that's not enough to get to the general public. And so, will the government military reveal that? I question that. I think that they've got to be pressed by an international body, which would have a substantial amount of information itself, and Americans like we had. Americans who would come forward and testify and would be part of the dialogue that would give the facts firsthand to the global community. And then hopefully this commission that exists within the UN that doesn't do anything would be empowered to monitor all activities, to pull together all the information on the subject of extraterrestrial from the United States, from every other country. It would be in one central global organization that would do this issue justice, because this issue is extremely critical to the survival of the planet. And so why one country, be it the superpower of the world, should be able to sequester all of this information and knowledge from the general public or from the scientific community. You see, the damage that's done by the U.S. policy is that the scientific community does not have the freedom to exchange scientific information to arrive at a better conclusion, a better knowledge base. So when you got secrecy of the scientific community, which is what's happening, you do damage to our scientific advancement.
Right. We saw this with Dr. Thomas Vallone when he was trying to explain to all of us how, you know, with the zero-point energy propulsion and the bubble around the craft, that's how they correct for Mach 1. And, you know, he was thrown off of his job at the university for 6 years, and he had to prove himself and be brought back into the community, which he did. But all of us listening to him about the science, our eyes were spinning in our heads, because we really, the scientific community doesn't even have a chance to, they understand all these things, they've mastered it, and they can't even, we haven't been exposed to it as a people in our nation.
That's right. And I too was impressed by Dr. Vallone's testimony. In fact, he gave me his book, which is far above my capacity on the formulas to understand. But here, too, he should be able to engage with the scientific community freely and openly on this subject. but that's right. Not what's happening. You know, there's a major portion of scientists who presently are involved are operating under the cloak of secrecy. And that does damage. That does damage to the scientific inquiry. It does damage to the perception of the public, and it permits the military to debunk, and the media, which I think is changing to some degree, trying to ridicule those who want to pursue knowledge in this area.
Right. I just want to give a brief example. It's one of my favorite ones regarding Dr. Thomas Vallone. He, in one of his videotapes, he said that if you look at abductee Betty Hill and her star map that she brought back through regression therapy, he said he emails this to his astrophysics friends from time to time and says, you know, you don't have to guess where to put your telescope to find something in the sky.
That's right.
I love that story. This is it's really unjust how we're being robbed of these sciences.
Well, it does humankind a disservice. First off, science should be free and open, but because of the potential for war and the exaggeration of defense, we spend billions of dollars on scientific inquiry in secret, and only when many of these scientists are later in age feel guilty about what they've done and the fact that they didn't share this with the public, that we do get glimpses of what's going on. But no, the tragedy is that the scientific community is funded by the military-industrial complex and then must adhere to their secrecy criteria, which does not serve humankind very well.
Right. There's a story that's out there, who knows if it's true, and it says that originally, back in the 20s, 30s, that the nuclear fission was given to humankind from the extraterrestrials, the ones who are working with us, and that that became weaponized. And not only did it become weaponized, but the nuclear bombs were taken out into space. And that's why we were seeing all of these sightings and events around nuclear facilities, that the extraterrestrials refused to give us any more technology because we misuse this one and that we have to reduce our nukes before, you know, anything else can happen.
Well, but that's a given. I mean, that we should be mature enough, rational enough to come to that conclusion without extraterrestrials telling us about it. But we're not. We're not at all rational about, and we are a really warmongering planet. And since the United States is, quote, the leading country in the world from a power point of view, then I think it's not difficult to come to the conclusion that we are the most dangerous country in the world in that regard. And I say that as an American who loves his country but is embarrassed over the policies that it pursues.
Agreed, yes. That's Stanton Friedman, the noted researcher's point of view. He says that people say, why don't they land on the White House lawn? And he looks at them and he says, why would they? Why would they?
They'd be shot at. That would be the order for the military. And of course, you get a lot of that in the fiction stuff that, you know, it's going to be the war of the worlds. Well, obviously, the extraterrestrials are more mature than we are. They're far, far ahead of us scientifically, and they choose not to go to war with us. We're the ones that have a bellicose attitude that we have to defend ourselves from them. They clearly have the power to destroy the planet. They choose not to do that and literally come in friendship. And we have not lived up to that greeting of friendship. And so right now, when they talk about, oh, we can't tell the people the truth of what's going on because the people will panic. The people won't panic. It's the leadership that has panicked and continues to panic in this regard. I think the people would with open arms, accept extraterrestrials who are coming in peace and who want to help us advance to their level.
Right. There are some who I run into in my work that believe that we're using the reverse technology propulsions on machines like the ISS. Some people say there's more than one ISS going into deep space, and that they're exploring planets and doing things out there that we're not even aware of. And so I think when people say, well, you know, what's the big deal? I think there's a lot more secrets that we don't know about.
Well, there's no question. And now, I had raised a question, of course, at a hearing, that if we do have the scientific knowledge for the energy propulsion systems, which would or fusion, and if we do not share that with the planet, that's criminal, because that would mean that we would change the political formula that we're using, which is warlike. It would mean that a major cost of energy could be brought down to very, very low. And so human beings would be the beneficiary of this, but we're not. And so the testimony that blew me away was that one of the heads of our military industrial contractors said in a deathbed statement that we have the ability to take E.T. home.
Right.
Well,
Ben from Skunk Works, I forgot his last name.
Yeah, but if we have that ability and we don't share it with the rest of the people on this planet, then that's a criminal. That's a criminal offense to human nature.
Absolutely. All of us can see that we have children starving in the streets in every country of the world, and that, think about the Bangladesh fire. I mean, if we have that technology, we could have machines that would be moving that building and getting people out. And I mean, the implications are endless of what we could be doing compared to what we are doing, which is absolutely primitive.
Yep, and that's right. And we're kept in this primitive state because of the secrecy of the government, the United States government, with respect to ET presence.
I have another proposal that what if we did shame the military by having disclosure a different way and people find out what they've been doing? Maybe that would end perpetual war. Maybe there's a purpose in it.
Well, of course it would end perpetual war. The minute you took away the basis of conflict from an economic point of view, you would really end perpetual war. But the problem is not the perpetual war rests upon the greed and power of individuals within the structure of government, or governments, plural. And that's the problem. These people control right now, and they don't want to cede control. And we have to find devices that will do that. And this control, here, when you say military-industrial complex, you're talking about all of the corporations that make the weaponry for the United States and other countries. They sell it. We are the largest exporters of weaponry in the world today. The U.S. is, and of course, the other key members of the Security Council at the UN fall in line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 as weapons exporters. So when you get the leadership of the world through the Security Council, which is the major cause of war, because we equip the people to do this, then you begin to see the dimension of the problem that we face. And that's the reason why I feel that this should be a head-on confrontation at the global level and not just trying to lobby the United States government through the Congress. And keep in mind, the Congress, the presidency, and our government along with the rest of the governments throughout the world, is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the military-industrial complex, Wall Street, meaning the global banking system. Yeah. And when you look at NATO, what you see is the globalization of the military-industrial complex.
Absolutely.
That's the situation we're in today, and it would take something very, very unusual to break out of this conundrum.
Yes, I agree with that. What I'd like to do now is mention to everybody about this flyer that you put around at the end of the hearings. It's called the National Citizens Initiative for Democracy. And if I could just read on here, it says, would you like to limit the influence of money in politics? Reverse the Supreme Court's Citizens United ruling. Repeal the concept of corporate personhood. End the military-industrial complex's control of our government. Make education and revitalizing our nation's infrastructure top priorities. End the war on drugs. And end the culture of perpetual war. And I read this flyer, and I was pretty amazed by what it lays out, and I was wondering if you could share that with us, please.
Well, when you look at it's fairly easy to describe the problems if you're prepared to make the investigation. But and there's quite a number of people throughout the world that do that. You know, we focus on the problems. It's easy. It's dramatic. Mm-hmm. But what we need to do is to focus on a solution. And so many people say, oh, here's the problem. What we have to do is inform the people. Well, that's fine, but that's not a solution.
Right.
Informing the people when the people do not have the tools to act upon that information is merely a device to create a cynical attitude among the populace.
Absolutely.
So when you're looking at a solution, you have to say, well, the solution is not in the issues, and that's what you were just describing. These are the issues, some of which are very important, but and there are many others. But the answer is not focusing on the issue. The answer is focusing on why you can't address a solution to these issues. And that leads you to the conclusion that it's in the structure of our human governance. And our structure of human governance is representative government. And that was designed at the close of the Age of the Enlightenment. You're talking about the 1650s to 1750s. And that conclusion was that we're not going to be led by monarchists or priests, that the people are going to be the ones in charge. And so the people that governed at that time concluded that we've got to find a way in a new form of governance to continue our leadership role in the world. And that was representative government. Because
right.
with representative government, we don't have a democracy anywhere in the world. We have representative government, where people in elections give their power away to representatives who then govern them.
Right.
And that's the format we have right now. And that's the format that's not working. So we have to look at it. Well, what else can we do? Well, it's very simple. There's only two venues for possible change. Mm-hmm. And you won't be able to correct any of the problems unless you have the power to make the change. And so we look to the government. That's where the problem exists. And you look to the people. And the people, they have the power, but they don't have the procedures or the rules to go ahead and exercise serious power. All they can do is give it away.
Right.
And so what we need to do is to define a new way for people to exercise power. What is that way? It's very simple. What is the central power of government? That's lawmaking. So the people can be brought in, cannot be brought into the executive any more than they are right now, or the judiciary, but the people can be brought in wholesale into the lawmaking process in partnership and independent of representative government. And what I've written is a law over a period of years with the input of scholars. And we had this law, which we call the National Citizens Initiative, which sets up the procedures for the people to be able to make laws just the way the Congress or legislative bodies do around the world.
absolutely brilliant.
And so it's the people's legislature. And then we also set up in this law a trust, which is the People's Trust, that then administers the procedures put forth on behalf of the people, just like we have the agency within the Senate, within the House of Representatives, that administers the procedures for the members. So we have that in this law. It's called the Citizens Trust, and that's a permanent agency that serves the interest only of the people's legislature. And so the people's legislature, because the trust is there, can operate independently of representative government. Now, this becomes a win-win. Representative government will then adhere to a better practices on a day-to-day basis because the people will be able to set the policy issues. The people aren't going to want to get involved in a day-to-day operation of government, but they sure do want to set policy, and that will permit us to overcome the power of the military, the power of the corporations, the power of the nefarious groups within existing bureaucracies. And so all it would take, now in addition to this law, we outline the procedures to get it enacted into the United States government, into every government in the world. And that is a device that goes around the government, where you ask the people directly, do you want to be empowered? And if you do, you vote for it. The flyer that you picked up is really a ballot. It's a copy of the ballot that exists on the website, National Citizens Initiative for Democracy, ncid.us. Anybody can go there in the United States and vote for it. And when we get the majority of the people who voted in the last presidential election voting in the affirmative for this law, it becomes the law of the land, period. And then the people will be equipped. So this is meta legislation or fundamental legislation to empower the people to act as lawmakers henceforth. I'm reminded of a quote from Marcus Cicero 2,000 years ago, who said that freedom is participation in power. Right. Mind you, freedom is participation in power. The central power of government is lawmaking. Therefore, until the people can become lawmakers in partnership with their elected lawmakers, they will never truly be free and will never be able to truly address the issues that they face in their daily lives.
So let me break this down a little, because this is a lot to take in. I want to just put it in simple terms. It sounds to me, I mean, this brings to my mind those cartoons on Saturday morning in the 1970s, Conjunction Junction, when the bill went up the steps of the legislature to become a law. Like, it sounds like you've made a vehicle that shows people how to go through that process as citizens.
Correct. Exactly. And my problem is it's taken me, I've been at this for 25 years, and it's taken me 7 years to just write the legislation. But at my age, 83, I don't have the organizational stamina to bring this about other than to complete the work that I've just presented and talk about it. So right. We need organizations and leadership that will seize upon this. Like, here, take the Wall Street movement, these young people that around the world were protesting our economic system. Well, what they need to do is to go beyond protest and develop the power to do something about it. And they didn't have the power, and so the police power of government snuffed them out wherever they appeared.
Right.
And so what they should be focusing on is getting the votes to enact the National Citizens Initiative into law within their country, and then they would have the ability to change these issues that they're so concerned about.
Another question comes up. You were speaking at the hearing a little bit about having maturity in these issues. And so I guess my question would be, I've seen these emails go around that are emotional in nature, and they say, you know, let's vote everyone out. If they don't, you know, follow the law, then we'll get rid of them. Anyways, that it seems like some people would be able to get the votes for silly laws that really don't solve the problem, and that would be one of my worries.
Well, you shouldn't worry, because I've, from my analysis, clearly 20% of the people, the voting public, are dumb as fence posts. But that means that there's 80% that can function, and there are extremes within the. And there are extremes within that 80%. But what happens is when here, let's approach it this way. The structure of representative government is designed to keep the people in civic adolescence. That is, oh, I want this, but I don't want to pay any taxes. I want that, I don't want to pay any taxes. So that's adolescent behavior. Now, how do we get the people to adult citizen behavior? You do it the same way we have brought about the growth of our children. And that is, we give our children responsibility as we go forward, and as a product of that responsibility, they get to mature. Well, the same thing will happen. Once you empower the people to make laws, they'll be the crazies, there's no question, but the procedures that we have within the National Citizens Initiative for Lawmaking, and that's the reason why you need detailed procedures so that you can guarantee that the process is deliberative. Lawmaking is a serious endeavor, and so you need definite, deliberative procedures that will permit it to be done properly. And we have all those procedures in the National Citizens Initiative. And so I have no fear about the crazies taking over the institution. Now, what will happen is that many people that do not bother to vote right now will see that their vote can make a difference and will become involved. And it will be involved in a very efficient fashion because of the very easy way we have for people to vote on initiatives. That is, you could vote 7 days a week, 24 hours a day from any place in the world. And you can vote for 52 issues at the federal level, 52 at the state, 52 at the local county. So there's a limited amount of issues that can be dealt with intelligently, and it's a process. It's a legislative process just like the Congress. In fact, what I did is I copied a lot of the procedures that exist within the Congress, but the structure of the National Initiative, National Citizens Initiative, can apply anywhere in the world with any government in the world. And that's my hope, that once we could get this enacted into law in one country, hopefully the United States, but here again, we would need upwards of 65 million votes to bring it about. And so I'm dubious that under my present operation that we could do that. But if we had organizations like those people who organize the Wall Street protest, if they would seize upon this and try to organize getting the votes for it, then they would be empowered to do something. But protesting is not good enough. Protesting, right. All that does is alert our oppressors to use their police power to stop us or to put in jail our leaders, the anarchist leaders or the protest leaders. That's not good enough. What we need to do is to concentrate on an evolutionary process, and that's what this would be. This would be enacting a law that empowers the people to make laws, and that would be the beginning of the end of the corporate oppressiveness that exists not only in countries. You know, you get a lot of people who say, oh, God, we can't have world government. We got world government.
Right.
We've got world government. It's called corporations. And the primary corporations that lead it are the bankers of the world.
The bankers and the oil company.
The oil companies are all part of the military-industrial complex and what I call Wall Street.
Right.
And of course, the Federal Reserve System in the United States and the phony economic systems that we have, which turn around and punish ordinary citizens for the infractions and for the crazy activities of the bankers and leaders.
That would be my next question. regarding the National Citizens Initiative. Could we pass laws together, like closing down the United States Fed or closing down the Internal Revenue Service and starting new taxes?
Of course you could. You could, and of course, if we could get this in other countries, we not only could do that, we could turn around and vote for a direct democracy at the global level and then really deal with these things of bringing about peace through disarming all countries and have nation building by an international organization and not by the phony operations we have with nation states who do this for their self-interest and to get the resources of these other countries.
Right.
That really is where it's at. The people could be able to do this. It's a lawmaking process. The advancement of civilization has been to making laws. And now the leaders make laws for their own benefit. What we need are for the people to make the laws on a majoritarian basis for their benefit. And that would permit us to do away with all of the excesses of war making, the excesses of banking. All these fundamental institutions could be corrected and improved upon, and the information is there. We're not talking about rocket science about designing these new institutions.
Right. I had an experience where a small group of people had put together, they had created their own nation, and they had gone to the UN and asked for a number, and they were granted that. They went through the process, they were granted it, but there was the one final step of receiving the number. They didn't get that far, but they were invited to the Organization of American States to work on the caucus that was figuring out a law. And when we got there, we found out that this group had been meeting for 14 years to write this law, and that the caucuses weren't anything of they were goofing off on purpose, it seemed, for 14 years. And we saw that firsthand and was a little shocking. So I think some of the laws are out there, but they're being completely ignored. And some of the international pursuits are out there, but they're not being utilized at all.
Well, but that's the classic example is what we started out with. And that is that the UN has a commission that was set up in 1978, I believe. And that was to create a commission to study and analyze and garner all the information about extraterrestrial. And that commission has done nothing.
Right.
That's what we need to energize. It's already there. All we need to do is energize it. And the way to do that would be to call for a vote of the members of this commission, 74 countries, that then would present this to the General Assembly for a vote to create a global conference on extraterrestrial presence in the planet. And
yes,
that would be the beginning of reversing this whole body of secrecy surrounding the subject. But then I would hope that what people would realize that once we can do that at that level, that we could also turn around and go to the fundamentals of human governance, and that is that representative government is not enough. We don't have democracies. Democracies means it's governed by the people. We don't. We have a government where the people vote on election day to give their power away. And all they got to do is wait another 2 years, 4 years, or 6 years to get it back to vote for another few seconds in the polling booth. It's really a very sad story in terms of human governance. The elites have had control from the beginning of civilization, and they want to keep control for infinity. And the way we can reverse that is by empowering the people to make laws. Lawmaking is the central power of human governance, the rational central power. Warmaking is the irrational central power.
Right. It's brilliant. It really is.
Well, let me repeat the where people can go to the website.
Sure.
You have the ballot, which I don't have the economic wherewithal to really advertise the ballot. But it's very simple. We're electronically. You can go to the website ncid.us. And then if we can get this going heavily organized and raising money to do it in the United States, we can do it in Europe, we can do it in Asia, we can do it South America, we can do it all over the world. And the people eventually would be in command of their destiny, which they are not now.
I'm more than happy to take this recording and put it on a YouTube, and I will post the YouTube and the link to the website and more information on my website. And I think that's how it will begin spreading when people hear you explaining it.
Let's hope so. Let's hope that the people who are in the protest movement, the Wall Street protest movement, will realize that protesting is fine. You know, the anarchists are fine. Problem is, it's not enough. You have to do something positive, and what is positive is to take people and give them the tool of lawmaking, not just the tool of protesting or yelling. This is to give them real power. Change will not come about unless the people have real power.
That's right. Protesting takes a lot of effort. It takes away hours from a person's life. And that effort could be spent on the internet organizing people and raising money.
That's right, and getting them to vote for the national initiative. That's the thing that breaks my heart, is that I really appreciate these people understanding the problem, but they don't offer a solution. You know, here's the solution you generally hear. The people should and the government should. Well, that the government won't and the people can't because they don't have the power.
Imagine what would happen if we closed the Fed and we closed the IRS just to begin.
Oh, God, it would be unbelievable. We could have a people's bank. That's who would control the money, who would issue the money needed. It wouldn't be the Fed, which is controlled by the banks.
Right.
The banks run the Fed.
We could cut them out of the picture pretty quick.
Oh, yes, we could.
And 65 million.
And also the war-making capability. We need education. Here, the United States is 26th in education. We should be number one for education.
I have teenagers going to college, and I'm disgusted, really.
Oh, it doesn't get any worse. Here, our education system is such that a teenager goes to college, comes out owing $30,000, $40,000 in debt. It starts out their economic life in absolute crushing debt.
It's ridiculous.
It doesn't get more diabolical than that.
Besides the single mothers who are also paying part of the tuition as they go through and taking away from the rest of the family, promising the other kids they'll do that for them too. And then the states, you know, take down the requirements for math and science. And us who have degrees are standing there going, are you kidding me?
Well,
let
me give you an example that would surprise you. I was in Iran with my wife for 2 weeks in February. Mm. And their education system is a student at the end of the K series can take a test. And, of course, that's all free up to that point in time. You take a test, and if you pass the test, you go on to high school. That's free. You take another test at the end of high school. You go to college. That's free.
Yeah.
And I'm saying free. And then you want to get a PhD. If you can pass the entrance test, that's free. Now, for those students that can't pass the test, the cost of annual education is $600 a year. That's it. So education is their number one priority. It's the number one priority in China. When you look at it, it's the number one priority in South Korea. So when you look at in Japan, when you look at the countries that are successful, they are the ones that make education number one priority because education is the future of the country. And the United States, I'm predicting that our future is failure and decline because we do not put education top priority.
Yeah, how can it not be, right? And our kids can handle. Dr. Thomas Vallones of the world, where will we get them from? We're not teaching them the math nor the science. We're not teaching them enough science for them to understand that they're not being taught the right science.
That's right. That's right. A lot of the education we get is cosmetic, but it shows. It shows when you get a third of your student body that does not even graduate from high school. And so what happens is the wealthy get good education. Isn't it terrible that we base the cost of education on a property tax? So if you live in a poor community, you get poor education. You live in a wealthy community, you get good education.
Right.
You can begin to see that the structure is wrong. And that's what could be reversed if the people had the power to make laws on a majoritarian basis.
Right, absolutely. Well, I very much appreciate you coming on and sharing all these things.
Well, I appreciate you having me. And again, let me give the website. It's
sure.
NCID.us. That stands for the National Citizens Initiative for Democracy.us.
It's fantastic. I will send this out in an email as a YouTube, and I will share it widely.
That's right, and I hope that organizational individuals, people who have that talent, will seize on it and carry it forward and get it enacted into law. And again, thank you for giving me this exposure.
Senator Gravel, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for your dedication at the citizens' hearing. It will go down in history, and it will not be forgotten.
Thank you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.